Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Hi there, I'm Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio today live, and Dr. Samira Umat, welcome. Wow, what a day. Last day of September, can you believe it?
Yes.
Last day. Yeah,
it comes by faster and faster, but yeah.
What is that? And it's going to be gorgeous this weekend, so. Yeah. Dr. Mixon, you get out on the trail today?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I was out, these days, though, when I leave the house for my morning jaunt, it's pitch black.
Dark. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a headlight?
I said,
yes.
Oh, dark. Yeah, I've actually got several headlights.
Okay.
They're really fancy ones, so they have it's a band. It's not a single light. And it really illuminates the trail for me.
Oh, so, that's good.
And I put it on one of my fedoras, usually my old one. And so, yeah, I can see where I'm going no matter how dark it is. And then by the time I get home, there's the false dawn. The sun's
there
not really up, but I can now turn off the light and see where I'm going.
Okay.
Because I spend about an hour each morning from about 6 to 7.
There you go.
Very cool. Yeah, very good. It's been 2 weeks since we've all been together live in the studio. In fact, let me give that phone number so you can get right on the phone at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757 with your questions for Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon this morning. We'd like to start with a medical update, see what's going on. Seems like COVID we all seem to know at least one person, and both Dr. Mixon and I know one person in the studio has had COVID. So let's find out what's happening in the world of COVID.
As my son said, it only took 3 years for me to have a positive test.
You're a tough one.
Yeah, it was really kind of interesting because the rest of your family all caught COVID and you stayed healthy despite it.
And I did not quarantine from them.
No. And yet this time, you got sick, and no one else caught it.
Well, not initially they didn't, but then my son tested positive afterward. And then he tried to go in to see if he could get a blood test, and they said, well, we don't do those anymore. So he said, okay, off to school I go. So he went back to school.
And, all right.
There's nothing else to do.
That's right.
So thankfully, we've all recovered. And yes, it took me down. I slept for a few days, but then I slept it off. I lost my sense of smell and taste, but it's coming back. Thank goodness.
Well, I don't know. No sense of smell and taste, then you get skinny real fast, right?
You lose your interest in
eating.
But I would lose muscle, not fat.
Oh,
and so that's not going to work.
No.
I need to maintain muscle and lose fat. So yeah,
okay.
I got to work for that one.
All right. Well, should I get you some, dumbbells or something for your office so you can work out?
Sure. Is that going to be my gift for my new office?
Why not?
All right. I like it. Let's do it.
Okay.
You know what we can do? We have extra rooms. We can put a treadmill in one room.
No, we don't have extra rooms. Those rooms are filling up quickly. Everybody wants to have a room.
Everybody's asking me, can I have one of those rooms? And they're like, okay, hang on, guys. Wait. Yeah. But right now, there's still a lot of work to be done.
There is a lot of work.
It is beautiful up there.
It's much, much better than what we had, but some of the beautifying things
such as
the front desk is not there yet. We've had to just put a couple of tables in.
I know.
Because the front desks are not finished being manufactured for us. But yeah,
do you know how long the front desk will take?
I think somewhere late October.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's a whole month.
Yeah. It's another 3 or 4 weeks at least, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that delays our formal open house.
Yes. We'll have the formal open house in November, I think.
I like it. Okay. We'll do it then. But in the meantime, we are open for business.
Yep.
It's exciting to see everybody, you know, running around and people get lost in the rooms. I don't even know where they are and I'm looking around for them.
Yeah. Well, that's partly because the room labels have not yet arrived.
Yes. And also, you know, there's a lot of space to get lost in.
Yes. And 6,300 square feet.
So. Yeah, it's great.
The old one was 2,700.
Yeah.
And so this is 2.5 times as big as the original.
Right.
The old office. So, yeah.
Yeah, lots of medical rooms, lots of doctor's offices, the MA space is huge. We have 3 phlebotomy stations. A fourth one we can't use just yet because it's noisy in there with the refrigerator in there, our Sub-Zero in there. And then a center island coming on the way for the MAs. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side for Bella Medica, they used to have 2 rooms. Now they have 6. So 3 laser rooms and 3 treatment rooms. And we're getting new cabinets in the treatment rooms, and then they'll be finished once the cabinets are done. But till then, they're using the laser rooms for all the services.
So, yep. Well, we're getting it all done.
Yeah.
It just takes time.
Yeah, yeah.
An enormous amount of money.
Well, yes, of course it does. But it's. I was telling you earlier that, you know, it was exciting that in the last week, even though we are not to full capacity just yet, we are doing everything. The blood draws are going on. I'm seeing all the new kits, my DNA age and everything else going up as people are getting blood draws done. Then in terms of treatments, we're doing IV vitamin therapies. We had a patient come in for that. And we have our Viashore treatments going on at the same time, and then exosome therapies are going on, as well as all the hair patients are coming back for treatments for scalp rejuvenation with PRP. So in terms of procedures, it was exciting that we have all the rooms, we have the space, we're not struggling to reschedule people because of non-availability of rooms, and all the master estheticians have patients while and they can be seen as well as us in the medical field doing our medical work. So yeah, that really was very, very satisfying.
Shall I make your life more complicated for just a By talking about like, something new just for fun?
Sure, do it. Why not?
Yes.
I'm not, you know, yeah, it wasn't good. I wasn't comfortable right now anyways. Well, I do have another program in the works, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of the problems with getting old is your hands.
Mm.
You know, the skin on your hands gets so thin. It's almost like tissue paper, and you can see everything through it. And
well, I can put a filler in there anytime you want, Jerry.
There you go, yes.
Actually, I saw a paper just last week while we were off on growing that skin on the hands thicker again.
Okay.
Ooh.
With what?
We're listening.
With a topical resveratrol.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Okay.
No. Yeah, no. That paper was on topical rapamycin.
Yeah. Wow.
A 1%.
Okay. Now, you've talked about topical rapamycin for the scalp. Now, this is a second
for
application.
The hands.
Yeah. Yeah. For the scalp, it's to keep the hairs in that telogen phase, so they're actively
darker.
Growing, and they often get darker hair. So you lose some of your gray, and you get darker hair, and it grows faster and continues to grow much longer, which is kind of neat. But it turns out that a six-month study where they had a very dilute 0.001 percent topical solution that they put to their hands each morning for 6 months and then did biopsies. They did biopsies before and after and saw that the collagen was growing in the skin much thicker, and cosmetically it looked much more youthful and so on, because they're actually growing the skin thicker in the hands.
Wow.
So just
daily application. Yeah. Now
can we be your guinea pigs?
They tried 2 different strengths, and the stronger one did a better job. So we don't know, you know, how strong you could make it and continue to get better and better and better results.
Okay, so, you know, we know that high systemic doses of rapamycin can cause side effects. So as the topical, you're talking about a very small dose.
Very small dose just on the skin.
Yeah, and just systemic absorption side effects.
Well, no, they did blood checks, and they couldn't find any appreciable amount
no
in the
traces.
Blood.
No traces, wow.
Right.
Okay.
So the levels in the blood were effectively zero, but it grew the skin on the hands.
All right,
much
so
prettier.
So
isn't that kind of neat?
It is very neat, but did it also remove pigment? And
just the you skin. Still need to, the Bella Medica. Yeah,
okay.
Use the IPL or the Picassure to get rid of those ugly skinny things on your hands. But to grow that skin thicker again. The other thing though that I'm looking at is resveratrol solution might do an even better job.
Even better than rapamycin?
Wow. Even better than rapamycin on the skin, on the hands.
Really?
Yeah. So that would be an alternative that would not be a prescription drug.
Yeah.
Would be much cheaper.
Over the counter.
And if it works, I might even be able to have one of my other companies, the Relief Factor Company, manufacture it and sell it nationally.
Of course, why not? I mean, when you're thinking, why not think big?
Yes.
Okay. To all the listeners, please do not call asking for these prescriptions.
They're not available
to
yet.
Give them just yet. Okay?
No.
These are Dr. Mixon's ruminations about the future.
Yes.
Whenever I see a paper, I immediately think, how can I use this for my people?
And what can I do? Yeah, they
and
will want that.
Why not? We have to think big.
I love
but
that.
But please don't call just yet. I do not have a prescription for you.
And don't ask your primary care doctor.
But I'll send you a copy of the paper.
Send me a copy
That's
of the paper.
That's awesome.
That'll be great. Yes. We'll talk to the pharmacist.
Okay. This is good news. You are listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. And we have the phones lit up. Let's go to Bellevue. Steve is on the line. Hi. Good morning, Steve. How can we help you?
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. This morning I'm calling about shots, and your screener said whiskey or vodka. That's not what I'm calling.
That would be my question, too.
Oh,
gets
he's
rid
so funny.
Of all viruses.
Our
I'll tell
producer
you that.
Is amazing. Yes.
Gargle with tequila.
Yeah. I mean, I'm about Dr. Mixon's age, but I'm not as in good a shape. But I'm curious about RSV, flu, and COVID boosters this time of year. What do you recommend?
Okay.
Certainly flu.
RSV too, Jerry.
Yeah. RSV is around. For some reason, that's not on my list to get. I don't know why. Well, I had RSV as a kid. But anyway.
Well, you're getting a Tdap booster. You might need an RSV. You might not.
I might.
October 31st.
There
you go.
<That's
right. laughs> Count
okay,
down the weeks.
Maybe I need to add one more. My list.
Yeah. Okay. So flu, of course, yes. Pneumococcal, yes.
Yes.
And those are the two biggies. And Shingrix that I really do talk about. Yeah.
You know, we older folks, as we age, our immune system goes downhill. Flu is more likely to kill us than it was as a youth. Pneumococcal pneumonia used to be called the old man's friend because it's what took people in nursing homes for a long time.
Oh, wow.
But now we have a vaccine that prevents that. And RSV is... It was a big thing when we first went back to social activities because children had been isolated forever. This is normally a virus that kids get. Mm. And by age two, virtually every child has had RSV.
Mm-hmm.
But because the kids had all been isolated for 2 years, they had not gotten RSV. And so when they all went back to school together, all of a sudden, RSV swept through the pediatric population, and some small percentage of them were sick enough that were hospitalized, and a few died.
Wow.
So, you know, this was a virus that we protected ourselves from too well, and then it had to catch up. But it's pretty much caught up. We're about back to baseline now.
Okay.
And so while adults can get RSV, for most of us, it's not a significant illness. The codicil I would put on that is anybody who is morbidly obese, anybody who is a fragile diabetic, anybody who is on cancer chemotherapy, they have artificially suppressed immune systems. They might indeed need the vaccines.
Right. And then with COVID, you know, it's a personal thing.
Yes, it is. And it should always be.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. If you don't own yourself, you don't own anything. Yeah. And we just kind of have to remind our government that they don't own us.
Mm-hmm.
They work for us. They are our employees. They are not our bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think the same criteria applies. Dr. Mixon mentioned earlier, you know, if you're susceptible, if you're at risk, mm-hmm. if you're in the high risk category, then and you know that you're going to be exposed, protect yourself. But it's your choice. Yeah. Yes. Make an informed decision for yourself.
Yeah. Is that helpful for you, Steve?
But just quickly, I'm around a lot of grandkids. Does that have anything to do with RSV?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
does.
Small children, starting at about 6 months, kids become susceptible to RSV. Before that, usually their mother's antibodies protect them. But from about 6 months to 2 years, that's the peak time for children to catch RSV.
Okay. And so I wouldn't get it after they're two.
Yeah, if you got, you know, grandchildren that are 10 and 12, they're not likely to get it. They've already had it.
Yep, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for your call, Steve. And more calls still to come. Taking a break right now. Here's that number so you can get through. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
It's kind of nice to know that it doesn't have to be perfect.
Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, taking your calls today. And boy, we have a bunch of them, so let's just dive right in. Here's that phone call for phone number for you as well, 206-421-5757. Going to Dan, calling in from Ravensdale. Hi there, Dan. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Lynette. I would just like to say, Dr. Mixon, your show was great back in the early days before you got Lynette on, but now it's a wonderful production.
Thank you.
You had me holding my breath there for a moment, Dan.
Oh, yeah. So yesterday, after about 4 hours of intense abdominal pain and vomiting, it started occurring to me that there was a chance that I could die. I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I got myself to the emergency room. They did a CT and then an ultrasound and said, yep, inflamed gallbladder. As a matter of fact, we can take that right out for you here right away if you'd like. And they actually didn't say if I'd like. They just says, well, that's what we should do.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I says, hold the phone, you know, I think not. And so anyways, I got myself out of there. And so now, of course, you know, I've been listening to you for years, and I know that, you know, I got a long family history of the Alzheimer's. I'm 67, but, you know, I'm not as sharp as I used to be, I can tell you that. So I just, you know, I listened to all the things you said about, like, don't eat 5 hours before you go to bed. And I says, well, Dr. Mixon knows a lot, but I sure like eating a lot before I go to bed.
And I didn't say I wouldn't enjoy it.
The night before last, I ate and I ate and I ate. You know, my best eating time is just like right before I go to bed. I'm skinny. I don't have to worry about putting on weight. So, you know, but then something caught up with me, and I guess it was, you know, maybe they said I might have passed some stones or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now, Dr. Mixon, I would like to know, I'm ready, as a dying man can be, even though I'm great today, what do I do to save my gallbladder for the rest of my life?
Mm. That's a wonderful question, because you don't fit the profile.
No, you don't.
Mm.
You know, the typical gallbladder.
I'm really physically fit. I got low body fat. I got, you know, mostly muscle. You know, the abdominal fat's low, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, the typical gallbladder patient was in. And this is terribly unpolitically correct.
I know, it is not politically correct at all.
But we all know it.
Yes, we do. It was in our surgical books.
That's right. Fat, 40, and fertile.
Female. Oh, yeah. Forgot that.
That's okay. Right. Female, fat, 40, and fertile. That is, that's the typical
not
gallbladder
patient.
Wow. Okay.
Not at all.
That's right. Hmm? Yeah, first of all, they don't accept that there are females.
Excuse me, I do.
It's not a gender, you know.
It is.
And fat is now considered to be a big, beautiful woman.
You know, but you are right. They are in the hospitals, I believe, they're now asking, what gender do you associate with? And that, to me, is like...
Well, I associate with women whenever I have the choice. That doesn't mean I am one.
That's not what they are asking you.
not the same question.
Oh, yeah. Well, wrong answer. I like my answer better. But then again, I told my daughter that when they ask for her pronouns are Your Majesty. Because
I like that.
If they will believe that a boy is a girl or a girl is a boy, they should believe that she's queen of the school. I mean, why
works.
Not? It's less of
so.
A leap.
There you go.
So anyway, yeah, so you don't fit the typical profile. Hmm. You know, you're male. You're way over fertility. You are lean. You're fit and muscular. So you know, why on earth are you developing gallbladder disease at this point in your life? It's kind of odd.
I wonder if it was a red herring.
Yeah, if there may – well, or there – you know, you can get – reflux up in the through the common duct and get an infected gallbladder.
Well, yeah, I mean, inflammation is possible, but I wonder if there was something else causing his acute symptoms.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, but all we can tell you is at this point, assuming that they are right and it was an inflamed gallbladder, will be to limit the amount of fat in your diet for a while. You know, the gallbladder's job is it takes bile. The liver produces this compound called bile. And bile's job is to emulsify fat. So when you eat fat, it breaks the fat up into these little tiny, tiny, tiny micro droplets that can be absorbed by the bowel. But you don't need it all the time. So the bile runs from the liver into the gallbladder. And the gallbladder stores and concentrates it. It pulls the extra water out and makes that bile a very, very thick, almost an oozy gel. And then when you eat fat, the gallbladder contracts and squirts that now concentrated bile into the gut to mix with the fatty foods to emulsify the fat so you can absorb it efficiently.
And he did say he ate a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so sometimes that bile is so concentrated in the gallbladder that it starts forming crystals.
Mm.
And the crystals can accumulate to the point that they form stones. And the stones, then when the gallbladder contracts, can obstruct the outlet. So that the gallbladder is now contracting against a blocked outlet, which can be incredibly painful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what causes a gallbladder attack.
Mm.
So if they didn't mention stones in your gallbladder, and just inflammation, once more, believable but not typical.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Well,
this
the
is
rest of the red herring, but the oddball story is a year and a half ago, I had a massive crushing abdominal injury. You know, I had a ruptured liver and spleen, you know, but they were able to save the spleen. They put a stent in there. And you know, I was in the hospital for 18 days and then, you know, but I recovered fully from that. But of course, I've been sober for 12 years, 13 years, but, you know, I had a lifetime of drinking. And, you know, my liver was about ready to blow out before I quit drinking.
Yeah.
But,
So the combination of
that
scar
that
tissue,
explains.
Yeah, scar tissue from the old drinking history and then the trauma. Yeah, that's probably what triggered your episode then.
Yeah, it's probably more liver related than gallbladder related.
Yes. So, yeah, in your situation, I really can't think of a whole lot you can do to protect it except stay away from the alcohol and don't load
fat
on really
food,
big fatty foods.
Yeah.
You know, you might make your fatty foods a rare and modest amount.
Yeah, small frequent meals is what you want.
Yeah.
And that not eating 5 hours before you go to bed, was that really a thing?
Well, that's we call that intermittent fasting. And
okay.
You know, it has been shown to extend lifespan in virtually every animal. We think it will probably help extend lifespan in humans. But the very same mechanisms that you get from intermittent fasting, you get from the medication rapamycin. It is, in fact, a starvation mimetic. It makes your metabolism imitate the changes you get with low-calorie intake.
Well, the bottom line is that, you know, today we eat, we're an obese country. We mm-hmm. eat more than we should and that we need, and we eat more frequently than we should and that mm-hmm. we need. And so intermittent fasting is a way of decreasing that to give your body a rest, which includes, by the way, your pancreas and your liver. It gives mm-hmm. the liver a little bit of a break.
Yep. So, but I think you've given us the answer. I think it's due to your old drinking, your abdominal injury, your liver trauma, and then a big fatty meal. That was probably the combination that hit you. Okay, take care.
Good luck to you. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dan, for the call.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Dr. Mixon, is it best for him to try to eat better and leave out the alcohol and keep it, or have it removed?
I don't think I'd go get it removed.
Okay. Okay. Hang on to it longer if you can.
If this becomes a recurrent issue, you may not have a choice.
There you go. Good to know. Hey, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We're taking your calls this morning live in the studio, and here is the number, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Medicine, and we're glad you're here. Thank you for listening on this gorgeous day. It's going to be a nice weekend. Hope you're able to get outside and take advantage of that sunshine on this last day of September. 25 minutes away from 11, and we are headed to the phones. If you have a question for Dr. Jerry Mixon or Dr. Samira Umat, here is the number to call and get right through. 206-421-5757. Susan now from Kirkland. Let's go to Susan. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a question about an MRI. My neurologist wants me to get two, the brain and the head. And it raises a risk-benefit analysis because I have multiple chemical sensitivity, and I also have electromagnetic field hypersensitivity. And I'm wondering, is it worth the risk, or could that much magnetic force put me brain-wise in worse shape than I am now?
Well, I guess the question is, why do you need the MRI? What is troubling
you? All right, there's a question of basilar artery insufficiency. I have a lot of dizziness and balance problems and some memory problems and word-finding problems.
Okay, so it's for diagnostic purposes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, the problem is electromagnetic field sensitivity is one of those things that is so variable. Some people get very mild, or most of us have no discernible problems with it at all. And others, have significant issues. And the magnetic fields in a MRI are quite potent.
Yes.
You know, magnetic fields are measured in Teslas, which I think most people don't know.
Cars?
Oh, wow.
not in cars. Named after Nikola Tesla.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's who the car was named after,
okay.
Nikola Tesla. But he did a whole lot of work with electromagnetic fields and magnetism, and to the point that they had to measure magnetic fields in units with his name to them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right.
What about the cars?
The newest, most powerful MRIs are a 3 Tesla unit, which is very, very strong, but it lets us see incredible detail. The older ones were 1.5, so they've now doubled the strength. If my guess would be your symptoms would probably be related to the strength of the field. If they're just looking for blood flow, a very limited exposure with the weaker machine would probably be adequate for them. If they're looking for tiny, tiny things, they're trying to measure structures within the brain, the amygdala, and so on, then they'd probably want to use the more potent, the higher power machines. Mm. So I'm wondering, have you talked to your doctor, talked to your neurologist about, are there alternative methods for looking at that at those basilar arteries? Can he get adequate views of them with Doppler? Because Doppler ultrasound is much, much lower power. It's just sound waves. It's not it's not an electronic or a radiation field. It's just sound waves that they bounce in and look at the echoes coming back.
I mean, I can imagine their response would be, it's not the gold standard, we don't do it anymore, or something like that.
Well, that may be true.
Yeah.
You know? That's the one problem I have with the show. When somebody like you asks a question in which I have peripheral knowledge, but not the latest update, because it's not literature that I follow closely.
Well, true. But then, you know, Jerry, that's going to happen for a lot of things. We can point her in the right direction, though.
Yeah, we can.
And one thought I had was, you know, if you do have electromagnetic sensitivity, then you could talk to the functional medicine physician who diagnosed you. They might know whether an MRI of this nature is okay or not, and alternatively, a specialist in radiology. So a question to an MRI at UW in radiology saying, you know, is it safe given this scenario?
Yeah. What are your symptoms when you're exposed to strong electromagnetic fields?
Well, at the worst, many years ago, if I would go through the theft detection devices at the public libraries, I would get splitting headaches and have to go to bed for 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
My goodness.
At the library. I thought she was going to say at
the
security
airport.
At the
airport.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't traveled recently in the last 10 years, so I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
I assume it would be a problem because I have to turn off all the electronics in my apartment at night to be able to go to sleep and have any kind of decent sleep.
All right.
Oh, wow. You mean the microwave, and is that what you mean? You
I don't use
everything?
Microwaves. The TV.
The cell phone and the TV. And
oh, wow.
The Wi-Fi, the printer, anything electronic.
So with your degree of sensitivity, I'd be very nervous about it.
Yeah.
You need to talk to your doc and see if he's got another method. If they can do a Doppler study, that would probably be the safest for you, because that's just sound. Okay, it's about as dangerous as being shouted at.
In addition, there's the question of once they find out what the diagnosis would be, you know, as far as the chemicals and the electromagnetics of any intervention that they might want to use. I could be making it worse. You know, Dr. Maiden has had to say, we can't treat your hypertension because of your chemical sensitivity. So you'd be too miserable on medications. So only take an emergency rescue pill when your blood pressure exceeds a certain limit.
Okay.
Once we know what it is, you know, what can we do about it without further endangering?
Yeah.
Interventions,
you really only got two choices: medication with vasodilators trying to open it up, or surgical intervention. And that will depend to some extent on the degree of occlusion you've got. So first diagnosis, then therapy. Until you know exactly what you're dealing with, the chances of treating it effectively are poor. So I think you're going to need to evaluate how narrow those vessels are, how much trouble, how much grief they're giving you. I mean, obviously, having a stroke is a really bad thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if we can, even if it cost you a week of misery, as long as it was something you'd recover from, I'd rather do that than have you take a chance on getting a stroke. But the biggest thing is, can they see what they need to see with the Doppler flow studies? And that would be the first thing I'd do. Because these days, they even have transcranial Doppler flows. They can even look through the skull at the blood flow. So I'm thinking in the posterior neck, they probably can get enough of a view to tell us what's going on just with Dopplers. But once more, that's a guess on my part, because it's not my field of expertise there.
Right. And I hesitated to call because I know it's a very restricted focus that we're having that wouldn't apply to most normal people.
Yep.
But I value your input, so I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I've been taking notes. And I'll listen to this again on the replay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Very good, Susan.
Good luck.
And sounds like she has Dr. Brian Maiden, so she had mentioned Dr. Maiden, so that's our favorite. Heart guy. Yeah, he's our favorite cardiologist.
Ruben, maybe.
It's Ruben, though, not Brian.
Oh, yep. I looked at the wrong name there. Okay, Brian McKay. And Ruben Maiden. We're going to take a break, and we are back with Dawn. You're next. And John. And we have room for you and your call and your question as well. Here is that number to get through today. 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we'll be right back. September, the last day we can play that song, September 30th, and this is Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here, and we love taking your calls. Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio, and Dr. Samira Umat, and we are headed to Des Moines. We have Dawn on the line. Hi there, Dawn. Welcome.
Hola.
Hola.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Hey, real quick, I was listening to the show last week, and I know it was pre-recorded, but you referenced a test comparing one's chronological age with one's metabolic age. That's question number one. Uh-huh. And then question number two is, I've seen advertisements from the Kirkland Clinic regarding vitamin IVs. So my question is, as a longevity patient, would you recommend I take both of those, or by virtue of the fact that I'm a longevity patient, I don't need to do it because I'm already doing it.
Those are great questions,
Dan. Questions, yeah.
All right, Don.
All right. There is a test out that we have started doing at Longevity, and it's actually looking at methylation of the epigenetics and the DNA. So we're actually looking at how much of your genetic material has... Boy.
Uh-oh. We still got you, Don?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Must be on speaker.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I am.
All right. Yeah. As we age, our genetic material gets damaged, and that sets us up for a whole lot of things, from dementia to heart attacks to stroke, et cetera. And there are now nomograms that tell us what the average person's DNA methylation rate should be anywhere from 2 till 90-some years old. And so what we can do now is, when new people are coming in the clinic, we're offering to do that DNA methylation test, and that's going to tell us where they're starting. Okay, so, you know, if they're 60 years old, do they have DNA methylation consistent with a 60-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 70-year-old or what? So that tells us where we're starting. And then over time, as we treat them, it turns out we do have the capacity to slow that methylation and even to demethylate some of this DNA. And so we can do a follow-up study to see how effective our therapy is being. Are we slowing down their aging process or not? Or have we even gotten them to go backwards a ways? Now, it's because this is brand new. Mm-hmm. We're just starting to collect the data on the new patients, because that gives us a baseline. Mm-hmm. You know, if you haven't been treated by us yet, that tells us where you are when you're coming in. And then we can do one in 6 months or a year or 2 years and compare it to our first one. and see how good a job we're doing for you.
Right, but it is available to current longevity patients
current
as well.
Current patients can have it. It's about $300. But the good news is it lets you know how well you're doing in your efforts to slow the aging process. But what we lack then is a baseline. We don't know where you started.
Yeah, we
do. So it's important to the extent that I establish a baseline.
Yeah, we can do one on you now. That'll tell us where you are from a biological age right now.
Correct.
And then in a year or two, we can see if we're keeping you lower than your biological age. And my guess is if you've been an active patient with us and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, your methylation is going to show that you are from a DNA damage less old than your chronologic age.
Yeah.
That's going to be my guess. But it's a guess.
The value of the test is going to be in repeat testing.
Right.
And so you want to do the first one to get a baseline of where you are, no matter where you stand with your being a patient at longevity. And then you want to repeat one in at least 6 months or longer. Earlier than 6 months, I don't think is going to help.
No, you're not going to see much change. And that's why I say 6 months to a year. The lab recommends 6 months. But the lab wants you to do as many tests as possible. That's how they get paid.
But also, but also, you know, if you've been working at it for 6 months, you want to be able to see, are you getting some results or not? Or is
that's
it
right.
too early or not?
And that's why I say 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
Because a year, you should certainly be able to see changes.
Yeah, like, you know, when I do the cardiac inflammatory panel, I usually wait a year before I'll repeat that.
Right.
But sometimes some patients have done something dramatic and they want to know at 6 months or 9 months. Mm-hmm.
So
you talk to the doctor and you kind of gauge when is the best time for you.
Yep.
Now, what that replaces, though, so
when.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
when
it is.
You came in, we did an APOE and a telomere for you, which is still available, but we're replacing those two tests for new patients now with the methylated DNA test.
Right.
And so you are able to do it. All three clinics can do the test for you at any time.
I'll have it done.
Very good.
The IV.
Oh, the vitamin IV, Dr. Umat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
IV therapy, come on, that's your bailiwick. You're in charge of this.
Yeah, no, I have hummed and hawed about IV therapies for a very long time. Jerry knows this. It's been on the docket, and then I took it off the docket for a long time, and we recently brought it back. And what changed was FDA regulation a little bit. In the past, what was happening was doctors were using multi-dose vials, and the risk for contamination in patients was increasing.
And some people got hurt in other clinics.
That's
fortunately,
right.
never with us.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
we held off until we could get more information about how to do it safely. So I now have a full team that is trained, and what we do is we buy multi-dose we buy single-dose vials, and they're more expensive. We pay more money for it, and we mix it after you walk in the door. And so there's no risk for contamination. Mm-hmm. We're not using multiple bottles for multiple patients. Every patient gets one pre-mixed multivitamin dose that comes from pharmacy. We pay more money for it, but we reduce the risk for contamination. We don't customize it just yet, but I think coming into the fall and the winter, we will start customizing a little bit more. But for now, we offer a multivitamin. It is a very good idea if you are traveling, if you're dehydrated, if you're sick, if you're recovering from an illness, if you're concerned that you might be exposed to something and you want to improve your odds, or if you're just plain dehydrated.
Okay, very good. Can I ask a real quick question? My wife is pestering me about this. It's a bit awkward, however. How do I increase my semen output?
Yeah, probably don't.
Okay.
Most of the things that help men function sexually as they age have a side effect of decreasing semen production. So, it's a tough one. For instance, the rapamycin decreases fertility and decreases semen volume. Testosterone increases sex drive but decreases semen volume because it suppresses the production of sperm.
Jerry, what about prostatic massage?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how you would stimulate the production of the nutrients that are the purpose of most of that semen. Tell you what, we've got about 1 minute left before we have to take our top of the hour break. But let me think about this for just a minute or so during our break, mm-hmm. and I'll come back and see if I can come up with something cogent, okay?
Gracias.
Okay, so Don, you stay with us. Don't hang up. And John, we'll get back to you in just a few moments. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We have one more hour to go, and we welcome your call and your questions. Here is that number to get through this morning. It's 206-421-5757. Again, that's 206-421-5757. Taking a quick break, and we're back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat and caller Dawn in just a moment. Stay right there.